My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Speyside is the absolute epicentre of Scotland's distilling industry. And now there's a Speyside gin to complement the region's famed whiskies. Created by wine and spirits company Stolly Group, Tulkin Gin is a small batch gin with distinctly local flavours inspired by the terroir of Tulkin Estate. Surrounded by 22,000 acres of lochs and glens, Tulkin is a famous sporting estate in Speyside, long frequented by European royalty, US presidents, and titans of industry. This is a special episode of Drinks Adventures, produced in partnership with Tulkin Gin. While global brand lead Kara Anderson was in Sydney recently, we sat down for this conversation about Tulkin and the Scottish gin renaissance. Well, Kara Anderson, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thank you. It's lovely to meet you.
Tulkin Gin, tell me the backstory. How is it conceived and what's the insight and the plan behind it?
Yeah, definitely. So Tulkin Gin is a little bit different because it's a gin from Speyside. So a gin from whiskey country, I like to say. It's not what you normally see that made up in Speyside or distilled up in Speyside. But we are very lucky that we have an estate up there. Gorgeous part of the land. I don't know if you've ever been.
I have actually been to Speyside, yeah.
Gorgeous, right? Rolling hills, beautiful lochs. We have the River Spey, its namesake, that runs through it. And yeah, we have 22,000 acres of land up there. So, you know, goes on as far as the eye can see. And on that land, there's lots of botanicals that kind of grow naturally. There's lots of flavours. So basically, the land inspired us to make Tulkin Gin.
And when you say we have an estate, we have an estate.
I work for Tulkin, and Tulkin's owned by Stolly Group.
Yep.
So Stolly has a sister company that has an estate. So it's a lodge and an estate run as a sporting estate, so you can go fishing there. It's pretty famous for its fishing, especially with the River Spey. You can stay there, there's holiday cottages, and there's a gorgeous Tulkin Lodge, very humbly called a lodge. It's a 16-bedroom, beautiful, kind of almost castle-like house. So, yeah, lots going on up there.
Awesome. Maybe talk us through where it's made and that sort of angle as
Definitely.
Well.
Definitely. So we don't actually have a distillery on the estate. We do contract distill with a distillery. It's about 30 minutes sort of outside the estate, but you know how large it is, so it takes 30 minutes to get anywhere. Yeah, they're great partners of ours. We distill to recipe, and it's done in a distillery that can distill anything. So it's not your usual gin sort of column stills. It's copper pot stills. It's a slow distillation technique that we have, so we get the freshness of the botanicals in there. I think Tulkin's a really kind of nice, it's a London dry gin, so it's very juniper forward, but it's got a real fresh sort of fruity taste to it as well. And I think that's down to the distillation technique as well. So yeah, we contract distill there.
And we can't name the distillery?
Glenrinnes Distillery. They make other gins and vodka, and I'm sure they've done whiskey. I don't know what brand they do there, but yeah, they're prepped. It's a newer distillery and they're kind of prepped to do lots of different things. So I'm sure they've got lots of exciting things in the pipeline.
Are there any other gins being made up in
Speyside? There are. There are a few gins. There's many whiskies that come from that area, but there are definitely a few gins as well, like there are in all parts of Scotland.
What's the base spirit that they're working with there? Is it grain?
Yes, so 100% wheat. And we have the spirit. We then steep the botanicals for 24 hours, up to 24 hours. We then redistill. So it's all steam fed. So we keep the steam very, very low, a low bar, and very sort of continuous. And I should say as well, with the botanicals, it's quite a precision distillation technique, I like to say. Everything is measured out and hand measured as well. Tilkin's batch made, so it's made in small batches, one batch. All the botanicals are precisely measured, which, yeah, actually is quite uncommon in gin making. Normally it's a kind of scoop of this, a scoop of that.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Or they're, all the big guys will be pre-packaged, so it'll be like almost sort of bags of botanicals. But yeah, this is literally hand measured out to the weight needed for each botanical and then steep for 24 hours. And then we do a kind of long 8 hours distillation or redistillation after that. And then we get our distillate and we cut it down with water and all done in Speyside.
And talk me through some of the unique botanicals that are on the estate there you're working with.
For Tilkin, we have 14 botanicals. The botanicals, now, I'm going to be careful the way I say this because I think the benefit and the merits of a distiller is to distill something where you can't taste individual flavours. You know, I like to say it kind of takes you on a flavour journey, so you might be able to taste dry flavours or sweet flavours or fruity flavours even, but I wouldn't like to say that someone can actually pinpoint each botanical. So I think the job of a master distiller is to kind of blend all those flavours together. So Tilkin does have quite a few, 14. The difference, and a lot of them are sort of common botanicals that you find, it's a London dry style. So juniper is very heavy on the nose with Tilkin, quite light on the palate, but it is a juniper forward gin. The other botanicals that are slightly different and more sort of Scottish are bramble leaf, so bramble blackberry, slowberries, elderflower, and one really unusual one actually is asparagus, which I've never come across in a gin before. And I test you to try and taste asparagus in Tilkin. I don't think you can, but what I think it does is gives a sort of bitter aftertaste and you almost feel it down the sides of your throat and it kind of makes your mouth water to have more gin. So it plays quite an important part. Tilkin's a gin that tastes like a gin. And I think we were, there's been such a big kind of gin boom over the last, 5-6 years, especially, you know, maybe longer than that in the UK, and Australia's definitely going through it right now. But I would say it went sort of quite sweet and quite sort of flavoured gin. There's lots of huge number of flavours, pink style gins. I mean, there's so many different trends in making a gin with a difference. However, it was kind of veering towards what I would say is like a vodka category. So it's nice to see, even recently, like the last month, there's been gins that are launching. And it's nice to see that people are going back to the traditional style gin. And I think, you know, that's definitely a merit of Tilkin being in Speyside, looking to the tradition of distilling and the tradition of making gin. I mean, gin's been made in Scotland for 150, 180 years, as well as whiskey. So it's great that we have looked back, honoured traditions, and do make a traditional London dry style gin.
Yeah, I did notice it says it's more subtle on juniper than many other gins, which allows the other Scottish botanicals to come through.
Definitely. So on the nose, it's very juniper heavy, I think. So juniper is almost like a spruce, like Christmas tree nose, which is very green, quite grassy. You know, I think it smells like you're walking through a sort of damp forest, and that's real juniper. But on the taste, juniper is quite tart. It's quite bitter. It's sometimes not received well. It's quite a strong flavour to taste. So Tilkin is quite light. It's quite a delicate gin for being, it's 45% ABV. It's delicate enough to balance out those other 13 botanicals. So you can actually, you have that flavour journey I talked about. So you maybe get the slightly tartness of the juniper first, but then you get a real citrus kick, which is quite classic for a London dry style as well. And with Tilkin, the citrus is more a sort of sweeter orange citrus, so the sweetness starts to come through. Then you get that more kind of jammy mid palate, which is I like to relate to the more fruity style botanicals, so your slowberries and bramble leaf. And then you get the kind of bitter edge at the end, so that allows Tilkin to have a sort of length and that bitter sort of mouth-watering mouthfeel at the end as well. So it's got quite a nice kind of flavour journey, I'd say. And Tilkin's very much, you know, I call it the gin from whiskey country, and I think it's similar in whiskey that it's layers of flavour. And I think that's why, like we were talking about, gin and whiskey are very, very popular, because you can have these many different styles and many different flavour profiles that are different for everyone, right? Taste is subjective. So you might like something that's different to what I like, but then we also might like different flavours and different styles in different drinks. So you know, Tulkin in a cocktail, another gin in a gin and tonic, I don't know, something like that.
Did Stolle not have a gin in its portfolio prior to Tulkin?
No.
I'm not surprised you've come to market with something, because it's a pretty important category to have a presence in at the moment, right?
Definitely, definitely. And it's an exciting category, like it's still evolving. And as much as I think it's going back to traditional styles, I'm seeing so many different, and quite similar to whiskey, I'm seeing subcategories forming. Even I'd say like Scottish gin is a subcategory within gin, right? There's some really strong Scottish gins in there, like Hendricks, you know. The Hendricks is the global leader in most markets at that sort of price point. So I think we're seeing a lot of diversification in gin. And I like to say a gin drinker is quite promiscuous. They'll try lots of different gins and look for that different flavour. And also, you know, prefer one gin in a certain drink and another one in another drink. So as much as we've gone through sort of pink gins and flavour gins, right now I think people are looking at more innovative styles of that traditional flavour, but potentially cask finishing or, you know, putting some kind of cross-category to it. So I'm seeing like wine cask finishes a lot, especially in Australia. Tequila cask finishes, whiskey cask finishes, which is quite exciting.
Do you think Scottish gin is kind of recognised as a category by consumers? You obviously mentioned Hendricks is very well known. Yeah. Are there many other gins that have kind of gotten real traction outside of Scotland?
Yeah, definitely. I did mention Hendricks there, but I wonder if many people would know Hendricks is Scottish. I think with its Victoriana sort of packaging and stuff, I think people think it's more English. However, I do think what Scotland does have is a huge experience and a huge level of respect for distilling. And I think whiskey or Scotch has done a great job of educating the world of the traditions of Scottish distilling and, you know, luxury Scottish distilling and how good it is. So yes, there's lots of Scottish gins and they're all very, very credible. I'd love to see more, and I'm sure we will see more in an export market because, you know, there's lots in Scotland, but I'd love to see more globally. But yeah, I think Tulkin is a very nice reflection on Scottish distilling.
Tell me about the packaging, because it's about the most Scottish looking packaging
I
could imagine. So that must have been a conscious decision that you wanted people to know the provenance is Scottish.
Definitely. Like, be bold and be proud of it, right? It's definitely, I call it unashamedly Scottish. It has about every single Scottish icon on that bottle. So we've got the thistle on the top. We've got sort of rounded shoulder shaped bottle that's similar to a whiskey flask bottle style. We've got our custom tartan on the side of the bottle, which is amazing. And we had an event last night and there was tartan everywhere. And it's really nice to see, because tartan is obviously a very, very personal thing. It's very Scottish. It has lots of history and heritage in it. And it's nice to have something completely unique to the brand. The colour of the Tulkin bottle is blue, which is very different for a gin. It's blue because it reflects the River Spey, which is obviously very important to Speyside and to Tulkin Estate and to distilling, because we use so much water. There's lots of Scottishness about the bottle, but I like that. I think it's bold, it's proud, it's very different. And in a world of gins that are maybe going, again, down that kind of like vodka route, the packaging's normally very clear, very simple, you know, not so obvious as to the origins of where the gin's from. I quite like how Tulkin just completely stands out.
Now, is it going to be is this going to turn into a range of Tulkin gins, or is it going to be a one SKU brand?
What's really exciting is our distillery partners are so knowledgeable. We've got a gift in that distillery that we can distill anything. We've got a gift in the fact that we're from Speyside and the quality of ingredients and the terroir is perfect for distilling everything. So yes, I definitely think Tulkin has an innovation series in its future. What that looks like, whether that's going to be gin, I don't know.
Oh, really?
It could be anything. It could be gin and something. Yeah, we'll see.
So will it work in cocktails just generally where any London Dry gin would work, or how best should people work with this? Are there some signature serves that you've developed
as well? Definitely. I mean, that's the fun part of my job, right? you know, the benefit of Tulkin is it is that little bit higher ABV. It's 45%. It does have a sort of delicate flavour profile, but stands up so well in cocktails. So from a brand point of view, and where I like to drink Tulkin mostly is in a martini, and I serve it 50-50. I do quite a wet martini because Tulkin can really cut through that vermouth, and also a twist of orange instead of lemon, so it gives a bit of a sort of sweeter note to it, is delicious. And then a Tulkin tonic, classic drink, very refreshing. We would serve it with an orange slice again, just to bring that kind of citrusy note out of the gin. And then a Negroni. I think Negroni is, it's the number one trending drink just now. Just knock the old fashioned off the Drinks International list after 8 years. So I've had many a Negroni with Tulkin, but how I like to do it is a few drops of chocolate bitters, and we also put some blackberry jam or blackberry liqueur in there, just a sort of bar spoonful, so 2.5 mils, and stir that in, and it is delicious.
And what's the opportunity that you see for it in Australia? I mean, obviously we have a lot of local gins here, but probably Scottish gin is not too well known in Australia. So
yeah. I mean, there's so many local gins here. It's been incredible. And I'm actually going to check out some distilleries later to see, you know, how they taste, because there's so many. But for Tulkin, I think what's incredible, and I've only been here a couple of days, and I've obviously done some research beforehand, but the education around spirits is great here. People know what they're doing. Bartenders know what they're doing. The drinks I've seen on menus are a sort of wealth of flavours. So I think there's an opportunity to really sort of get the knowledge of Tulkin and the knowledge of how it's distilled and the sort of experience around the heritage told. And I think people understand that. And I think, you know, because it's distilled in Speyside, it's next door to some greats like Macallan and Glenlivet and Glenfiddich. And, you know, they've done a great job at educating. And I think Australians are big Scotch drinkers, right? So they understand. And even I was in Baxter's Inn the other night, which was, you know, a haven of Scotch brands. And I got the guys to try Tulkin, and they made me a few different Negronis, and they absolutely loved it. And it was just great to see an understanding for Scottish distilling and an appreciation for it too. So I definitely think Australians will welcome Tulkin and its story and try some cool stuff out in the bar.
Brilliant. Well, where can people find it?
Right. Well, Dan Murphy's, I think that's quite a local choice. You've
Not
got a few of those.
Not the first time I've heard that. Yeah.
And they've got some great stores as well. I went into one, I think it's like a premium version of Dan Murphy's the other day, and we're speaking to the sort of spirits advisor there, and he had great knowledge again and was really interested in the story and told me a few things about Scottish distilling as well. So yeah, Dan Murphy's, and it's around about the sort of $95 mark.
Well, Cara, thanks so much for coming by, and
thank you.
Yeah, congratulations on the launch in Australia.
Thank you. It's very exciting.